I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
When I came out to my mom, one of the first things she said was, like, she blamed the industry that I'm in. She just thought that because I did hair is why I was transitioning. I was like, no, there's a lot more to it, Mom.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together, see what it's all about.
And welcome to Dyking Out, a GBET podcast. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
Yes, I'm Melody Kamali. And today we're dyking out with comedian and hairstylist Bailey Pope about creative pursuits.
Yay, this was such a fun one. I love it when we have a guest who's somebody that I only kind of know in person and want to get to know better. And then having them on the pod is a great way to do it. And you'll see why we love my new best friend, Bailey Pope.
Our new best friend.
Quick announcements. In case you missed our earlier announcement, our watch parties at Henrietta Hudson's are now on Fridays. Look to our Instagram at Dyking Out for all the details. Also, they'll be posting about it on Henrietta Hudson's website. Get with the program. Also, if you're not subscribed to us, get with the program. If you haven't rated us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, shame on you. Help the community out. Help us, dykes, bikes,
help
everybody.
Us help y'all.
Yes, we just want more people to find us. Is that so hard to ask? Speaking of finding us, you know where you'll find me for the next week after recording this. We are recording this way before we are releasing it because I'm going to P-Town for Carnival Week. And I have to say, that's got to be my gayest thing. I have to do it in advance because I just said my real gayest thing of the week.
Yes, we're forecasting our gayest things.
Yeah.
Something gay has got to happen in P-Town
for
Carnival
Week. So many gay things. I think even though it's Carnival Week, they did cancel the parade because of the stuff going on with the Delta variant. The parade was the one thing of Carnival Week that I was looking forward to. That's okay. I think the gayest thing is that I'm going to be flirting with an older lesbian.
Yeah.
For fun.
I love that. I did that on Fire Island.
Yeah. I
one of my
love the old
dykes
of P-Town. And I'm going to get my flirt on. I'm going to encourage Cecilia to also get her flirt on. We'll see who can flirt with the most owls.
Make it fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Old wise.
Old. Oh, I was like old white lesbians.
Wise.
Yes.
What about you? What do you think is going to be your gayest thing of the week, Melody?
I think I'm going to have so much fun in P-Town. I, too, am going just for this weekend. I think I'm going to have so much fun. I'm going to scrap all my plans for Fire Island next summer and then start sort of fantasizing about a P-Town trip. I don't know.
I don't know what you're going to expect once you're there for next summer.
Yeah, because this is the time to book your gay travel.
You got to do
summer
it
ahead.
Yep.
You know, we make up such a small amount of the population, but it's very competitive for our little enclaves and havens. We have to book a year in advance.
But
and
I get
our spots.
I get it. Just like you get Cherry Grove now, and I've been to P-Town, and I get it. I get the appeal of being on vacation and that relaxing feeling of being surrounded by queers.
Yeah. It is a peaceful feeling. You know, and then we just have to make it to one more spot. There's one more East Coast gay beach area. And is it Delaware? Rehoboth Beach?
Oh, wow.
Am I wrong?
I wouldn't know. But, you know, me and gay beaches, I would be willing to venture, though.
Yeah, that's one more. And then there's Tybee Beach. And these are the gay beaches I know about on the East Coast.
I'm familiar with Tybee Beach, but I didn't know that Tybee Beach was a gay beach, even though I lived in Georgia for
I didn't until I was looking up
years.
Places last minute for P-Town before I gave up, like last spring, because you have to do it a year in advance. But
right.
There were things available on Rehoboth, which made me skeptical.
Okay. But we'll have to do research. If you know about Rehoboth, please DM us.
Yeah, let us know.
What's the deal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I noticed a lot of Rehoboth places had sister resorts or sister hotels on Tybee. And then I looked more into Tybee, realized pretty gay. I've only been on the off season, but I will be going to that area at the end of summer. Oh, so I will get to knock out another gay beach.
Wow.
Look at that. Maybe that'll be my gayest thing, planning my Tybee Beach spots.
I was going to say, planning, it sounds like a 3 years worth of gay vacations.
I know.
Well, we're going to just dive right into this interview because we did have so much fun with it. And we know you're going to love this convo. Today, we're diking out with comedian Bailey Pope about creative pursuits. I've recently gotten to know Bailey because we run into each other at every open mic that I've been to since getting back into comedy. I swear everyone except one, I ran into Bailey. And each time it's a joy. Also recently learned that she's a hairstylist for the fashion industry, including coveted gigs during New York Fashion Week. Let's get to it. Bailey, it's so crazy to see you outside of a mic or comedy show.
Yeah, the lights are on. What?
Right? I know. We've never seen each other in this lighting. So pleasant to see you. So excited to get to know you better and dike out today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
Let's get right into that.
I think the gayest thing I did this week was me and my girlfriend booked a trip to Grand Canyon because that's how much we hike. Is that we're flying to
Dykes on Hikes.
Yeah.
My favorite hashtag on Instagram.
I've never bought a pair of shoes for anything other than this. Like, there's life. And then I finally was just like, no, I need shoes for this. And I feel like the gayest thing is flying to a wonder of the world so that I can hike.
That's so gay. That's so exciting.
I want to go there.
I've never been.
How intensive hikes do you do? Do you like really strenuous ones?
It depends. Yeah. We do tend to like try to find something in like the 6 to 8 mile, like for day hikes. We haven't done anything like overnight yet, but when I was a teenager, I used to hike a lot with my dad and my brother. And so we want to get to be doing bigger hikes, but we're also like always just driving like upstate to go hiking for the day or something.
Where did you grow up that you would hike so much?
Grew up in Southern California. Cool. And Ooh. We were real close to like mountains, and so we could go to peaks on day hikes, and yeah, it was good.
Love
That's
that
so nice. And you and your girlfriend, when you started hiking together, were you at the same ability? Because this is where my wife and I struggle on hikes, is that I'm constantly, not to
Allie
brag, ahead of her.
Likewise.
I think that I do have a little bit more endurance most of the time, but like Kelly is my girlfriend, just like she would never let me know that she needs me to slow down. but I think now we're pretty much at the same place where one of us will be like mentally taking the lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mentally.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. I think like if we do it more, we'll get to the same level. That's always the case with my wife. Like I do think overall my wife is probably more athletic than me once she gets in shape, but I'm the one that like no matter what shape I'm in, I'll always like try to push myself a little bit more, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. My girlfriend is the one that actually works out and has a healthy lifestyle. And I haven't worked out in probably a year. And I eat dinner at midnight because I'm always coming home from comedy shit.
Yeah.
Right.
I am not healthy at all, but then I'm just ready to trek when we get out. And she's like,
right.
I hate you for this.
Love it. Well, I've learned a little bit about you almost exclusively through your comedy. Hiking was something that we did talk about briefly before the mic, but can you tell me and our listeners and Melody a little bit more about yourself? So you're from Southern California. I know that, am I right in that you had a somewhat religious upbringing?
Yeah. So I grew up in like a very Christian household family in Southern California. I lived there until I was 21, I think 20 or 21, when my kid was born. And then from there, we moved to the Midwest for a couple of years before moving to New York. And now I've been here for 11 years. But yeah, I was religious actually until like shortly after moving to New York. So it's a lot of my history.
What was it, something about New York that snapped you out of it, or?
I think it was all kind of like synonymous, where I was like wanting to be somewhere like New York. I was like mentally moving away from like faith, and like also like because I was mentally moving away from faith, it was like finally I felt like it was going to be okay to like transition and come out and everything.
Yeah. Have you found like you've have to replace the faith with something though? Like a lot of ex-religious people that we talk to are like now really into like astrology,
yoga,
or like they're spiritual or yoga or something.
100% no.
Stand-up comedy?
Hiking.
I think like I'm like making up for lost time of being like, what's your evidence? And it makes me not necessarily fun to be around. I was actually just, so I have a twin brother actually, and I texted him this morning as I was writing, I was trying to write a joke for something. And I was writing about how much I don't like zodiac stuff and horoscopes. And
right.
I learned this morning that So, you know, like people are like, oh, you know, what day were you born? What time of the day? Da, 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 da. And they're like, oh, and then they read your horoscope and they're like, oh, it's so, this is so you. This is so you. I'm like, then I tell them that about my brother, who is super different. But today I learned same exact day that I was born, Milo Yiannopoulos was born.
Oh, no.
And so I don't know.
What do you do with that?
Oh, it was fun for me because I can't wait to either use it in a joke or just to like dash dreams in general.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Wow. I've never thought about doing that, of trying to find someone who was born like same year, same day, and think like we must share all these.
I guess I'm traits. Just the same as Milo.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, now I'm afraid to find out. Yeah, same year.
I know.
Denzel Washington and right. Maggie Crane. Wait, what's the Dowager?
Dame Maggie Smith.
Dame Maggie Smith.
Yeah. Same year, right? Yeah, same year as Dame Maggie Smith.
Same vibe.
You're killing it.
Love it. Yeah. So we're talking about creative pursuits today. I met you in comedy, and I didn't know that you were a hairstylist and worked in that industry until the last time I saw you go up on stage. And I'm like, oh, learning something new every time. I love it.
I've got a lot to pull from. I've been a hairstylist for like 15 or more years. There's a point when you're a hairstylist when you're real young where you lie and say it's been longer so people trust you better. But then there's a point where you stop counting so people don't do mental math about how old you are. So it's been something like 15 years, but I started in California, and really the reason I started was I wanted to just not have a boss, and I wanted to open a business of my own. I was with somebody who wanted to do hair, and so I was like, well, how about I'll go to beauty school, I'll learn about the industry so I can open a salon. And then 2 weeks into beauty school, I was like, oh, I love this. It really worked out. I've done it for a long time. And then it's what brought me to New York also, to do New York Fashion Week and photo shoots and stuff like that. And so somehow I made beauty school work out. And now I'm here.
And how do you make that jump from starting out just going to beauty school to New York Fashion Week, which has got to be a pretty coveted gig, I imagine.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like most hairstylists would dream of doing it. And it wasn't something that I ever thought was going to be attainable early on. But when I first started, like the very first job I ever had out of beauty school was assisting an educator, a stylist who basically teaches on stage and does stage presentation. And so as soon as I was working for him, I was like, oh, I want to do this because it's like more engaged and it feels like a higher level than just being in a salon, which is awesome if that's like where you're you know, energy is at. But I always wanted to do like more things and be on stage and whatever and travel and all that. And so I started being an educator pretty quickly with a different company. I wanted to like be on stage and just like have an audience. And so I've always like wanted to be on stage. And so through doing that for years, I worked with a creative team with this hair company, and we ended up starting to do like have our own team that would do fashion shows at Fashion Week. And so a small group of us started our creative team, and then we did shows together for years.
Wow. I really had no idea how all that worked. Yeah. Of like having like teams.
There's a lot of different ways to go about it, but that was kind of my in. And then once I was with that team for a while, I learned a lot. And then I had joined another team for a while working for this French hairstylist, Odile, who she's just an incredible, sort of like a goddess, like in the hair world. And it was incredible working for her because it was the first time where it wasn't like my friends that I was working with. And she told me at the end of the season, like, I need you to come back next season because like it's hard to find people that work like you do. And so it was one of those times where I was like, oh, somebody else actually sees value in what I do and not just like my friends who I've kind of grown into a team. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but yeah, it's kind of a wild industry to come from just going to beauty school, which people don't typically respect it very much, and figuring out how to make it work.
Yeah, I blame Grease. How would you describe your like approach? And we were talking before about, you know, what we were going to talk about this episode, and you were saying there are a lot of similarities between comedy and styling, and it's like with comedy you have to like find your voice, right?
For sure.
And I imagine that there, especially if you're going to be hired to do fashion shoots and stuff, like what is the Bailey Pope brand of hairstyling?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that people like there's, again, so many different ways to do like the whole, you know, editorial styling and all that, but a lot of it is just like having the technical skills and then like having that, like that eye for like nuance. And when you work with a team, typically it's like a team effort to figure out what the look is, and then every model has to have that same look. But for me, like when I'm going into doing hair on my own, it's usually, you know, collaborative. You know, you're working with a designer and they want a certain energy, or they want to tell a certain story with a look or whatever. And so in hair, it typically is so much more collaborative versus necessarily having your own individual voice. You know, sometimes you get that, but for the most part, it's usually like you working with a team of people. And I think that's like what one thing that I love so much about comedy is that when you're up on stage, the joke and everything that from who you are as a person, how you approach it, how you speak, your thoughts, your angle on something, everything is just your voice. And so it is like, it's very different in that way.
That's like a lot of, we talked to a lot of comedians and how they got to comedy. And that sounds like a lot of people who broke free from improv say the same thing.
I can see that.
It's me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Carolyn, your route.
Yeah. Yeah. Improv and sketch. I'm like, I just need to isolate myself.
Yeah. How gay is the hair world? I feel like it's very gay.
Well, we have Shane. I know, Bailey, you don't watch The L Word, but
I mean,
Shane,
I remember
the fictional
Shane, yeah, the first like version of L Word.
Okay.
Yeah, they kept her around for some reason. I only say that, nothing against the character, just the stories they give her anyway. but I feel like this fictional lesbian character is like our most famous lesbian.
I mean, I like think that it is interesting. Like that storyline is really interesting, because like hairstyling, like being a hairstylist is one of the very few times where you're like paid to have physical contact with another person. It is like a very intimate thing. If you think about
those scalp massages,
do you pay money to like actually touch you, and like you're like it's under a cape and you have, you're just supposed to like, you know, it's a very, okay,
and
this feels weird,
you, like how you the world sees you, it's like super intimate,
you're like giving
and
control
have sharp
to somebody
your
else
head. Yeah,
that's my favorite part. So as far as like how queer the hair world is very gay, but it's interesting because I will say, first off, one of my favorite things about beauty school, you know, like I knew that I wanted to transition from the time I was like a kid. And so when I went to beauty school, it was like this wonderful time for me, because first off, I was just mainly around other women. And then like a few guys that were there were gay. Mm-hmm. And so it was like this sort of like queer experience that I was getting to have before I transitioned, but also it was like, oh, sure. You know, to pair up and do your makeup. I'm like, oh, bummer, you know? And so like, it started out pretty queer for me. Even though nobody else knew yet. And, so there are so many gay people in the hair world, but you know, it's super weird, and maybe not as weird as it, like if we thought about it, but like, once you get to like really high, like creative levels, it's weird how many like basic ass straight people there are. And it's almost like maybe there's a frustrating, power like story being told at those higher levels that maybe would just be sad to get into. But I feel like I
parallels to comedy.
I will say, yeah. Oh yeah. there's so many voices down here. When I came out to my mom, one of the first things she said was like, she blamed the industry that I'm in. She just thought that because I did hair is why I was transitioning. I was like, no, there's a lot more to it, Mom. So to my mom, super gay. Super gay.
Yeah. I do know a very high profile lesbian hairstylist, and I know this because this was somebody I talked with in like gay chat rooms when I was a teenager, and they I bought like a phone card to talk to her on the phone because it was like long distance, and this is how long ago it was that like you didn't want it on the phone bill.
Oh my God.
But the funny thing about it is I catfished her. I didn't realize that I, like, looking back, it wasn't until I connected with her later and was like, hey, the picture I sent you of me wasn't really me, but it was because I thought she was catfishing me. Like, she sent me a picture of herself and she looked so hot and straight that I was like, oh, there's no way that this is this person
her?
That I've been talking to. I sent her a picture I found of somebody who looked like a just slightly cuter version of me. It was like same like complexion, same color eyes, same color hair, whatever. And I just like sent that and
the most thoughtful and catfish. Then,
right. And then years later when we connected, I was like, this is really embarrassing. She's like, so you catfished me. I'm like, oh my God, I guess I did. But now she's like this like out, like a very like award winning, specializing in like men's haircuts and short haircuts.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing about the hair world too, is that like there are so many people that are super high profile, right? Someplace, yeah, somewhere. Well, like a lot of times we don't even hear about each other because like, I mean, I know hairstylists that are like making upper six digits and like nobody's ever heard right. of them, you know, like they're a big deal, but like just they don't get around.
I mean, again, that's similar to comedy. There's so many people, like the highest grossing comedian in Canada, I think. Somebody said his name once. I'm like, I have no idea. I've never heard of him. Couldn't pick him out of a lineup. And he makes more money than like any Canadian comedian, but we just...
He does like a bunch of corporate stuff.
Yeah, right? Probably. Like, who knows?
And I think a lot of people hate on him. I think it's just probably jealousy.
Yeah. He's got it locked up at Yuck Yucks. So when did you start doing comedy?
You know, it's a weird question. This is kind of like when you lie about being a hairstylist because people don't trust
right.
you. I've only been doing comedy about a year and a half. But because I've been on stage for like 13, 14 years, I've used comedy in my educating and my stage performance for so long that I've gotten to the point where, especially pre-pandemic, anytime I come home from work trips, my girlfriend would be like, oh, like, how were your classes? I'd be like, oh, they were amazing. I was so funny. And she's like, did they learn anything? I'm like, that's questionable. I don't know.
Yeah, because you do definitely come off as somebody who is very comfortable on stage, who's more experienced than if you were to put you against people who have only been doing it for a year and a half. People would be like, there's no way that Bailey's only been doing it for a year and a half.
Well, yeah, that's what I hope for anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very obsessive too, and so... Being my age, I like feel like I have to like work really hard to catch up because I would rather move forward doing this than doing hair forever. You know, it's kind of gotten to the place where it's like I've done what I wanted to do in hair.
Yeah.
It still makes me happy, but it's not what I want to be centered around forever.
Right.
I saw that I could make it work. I went to beauty school and I figured out that I could make it work. And now I feel like, you know, this is what I've always been really passionate about comedy, but I never felt like I would be allowed to do it. And now I'm just, you know, I can make this work too.
Have you ever wanted to combine them in some way?
I mean, that's kind of like how I've stayed so engaged over the last few years with it, is that I look at every class and every presentation I ever give about hair. I look at figuring out how to make it the most entertaining. Mm-hmm. I like live performance so much more than anything recorded or virtual. There's something about the connecting with people in person is so important to me. And so even when I've got, you know, I mean, literally my job, part of my job too, is I do presentations for a big hair company to like buyers for grocery stores. Like I do like some really random jobs.
Wow, yeah.
And so when I'm like able to give information and also have them engaged and really enjoying, you know, half hour about our new shampoos, like that is really rewarding to me. And so it is kind of like that combination of still doing hair, but engaging in comedy at the same time. And so for me, I can't imagine not having a live audience for whatever I do moving forward.
Well, then when you say you started a year and a half ago, did you start right before the pandemic?
I know. I was just doing some math, like, damn. Yeah.
Just like kind of trying to find time for mics, and it was just the wrong time to start. But it also was like kind of amazing time to start, because in my pre-pandemic work life, I was on the road, you know, a couple times a month, and just very, very busy. And so I've never been able to figure out where I would find the time to be consistent to get started. And so it was the worst timing and the best timing, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when things started opening up again, I remember I was seeing you before we started running into each other in person, but I was seeing you on all these lineups and I thought, oh, cool. A good queer comedian must have just moved to New York during the pandemic. Like, I didn't think that you just started during that.
I wish I could just, like, I wish everybody could just think that that is what it is. Because, you know, no matter
how much. I'll start
that
rumor.
Yeah. Oh, I'm ready. We're going to cut out any identifying information and just be like, oh, it's been 7 years. My girlfriend was with me at a show a little while back, and I was trying to like give the very nuanced answer of how long I've been doing comedy because I'm insecure about it. And she's like, you know, you make it awkward. You know that, right? I'm like, well, but I'm uncomfortable just saying it's been this much amount of time, you know? But she's like, well, maybe people will just be cool about it. I'm like, I don't think they will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can also just lie.
Yeah, just lie.
Yeah.
Like if you say like three years, you could easily just
say a
it.
Few
that's
years,
fine.
Like
a few years.
I'm ready to start lying about how long I've been doing it, because I've been doing it too long for where I'm at.
Yeah. Say a little while, a little while.
Years,
that's all they need
times
to know.
Three.
Yeah.
I mean, we just discussed it, but yeah, what a time to start. Oh God. When everyone was, I mean, that's ideal to come out. Everyone's still so rusty. I'm still going to shows where people don't know what to do, like seasoned performers who have been on like Comedy Central or just like, truly, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I completely blanked, or I need to grab my notebook. And
yeah.
It's like,
I know. Tomorrow we're doing a show. Melody and I are going to be in Provincetown, and they're like a 15 minute set. And
we're doing 15.
Yeah. You're doing Andy's show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't even know what a 15 minute set looks like for me anymore. It's been so long.
Yeah.
I was up there. Was that last week? Yeah, that last weekend I did that show.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was fun. It was like, I guess a couple of weeks prior, there had been a spike up there. And so there was like fewer people than expected, but it was a really fun show. And it was kind of like, especially when I saw that it was like, the town was more dead than expected. I was like, we're going to do 15 minute sets for how many people?
Ooh,
and the audience ended up being awesome.
Yeah.
It was one of those times. I don't know if you guys record your sets, but like I tend to record all my sets because I, you know, I like to hurt later when I listen. And
yeah, I record all mine and never listen unless I absolutely have to because I'm too afraid of that hurt.
I was so nervous about like, I'm going to do 15 in front of this many people. It's just like I felt weird about it. And so I forgot to record it slash I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And then it went so well. I was like, what is wrong with me that I didn't, I should have recorded it because a lot of things went right. And I was like, well, you fucked up and didn't record it. So
that happens every time. To me all the time. Yeah. Every time I'm like, well, I don't think this one will be the one worth recording. And
that's
always
the best set ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you need someone secretly recording you. Once my wife got me and it was the best set I had. But unfortunately, she started like 1 minute in. I'm like, this would have been the best tape ever. Anyway,
as a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Thing that strikes me too, you know, about being both in these two worlds that have, you know, you're creative, there's creative expression, there's this like trajectory and level of competition, but also one is so glamorous and the other is so disgusting. Like comedy is just like, how do you go from being somewhere that's all about like looks and this? And I guess comedy at some point,
eventually,
you know, but the early years, let's say
it is
pure grime.
Very, very, very different energies. Like, but the thing is, like, I've never felt like I actually fit when I'm at like Fashion Week. Like, I'll tell you, like, I remember the end of one season, I was just like, I was sweaty and gross, you know, like we're in these back rooms with far too many people. And it's, you know, you did a show earlier in the day and you're already tired and you had like half a shitty salad before starting the next show. And the last show of the season was Oscar de la Renta, which is always a super high glam show, an amazing location in the financial district. And to get out, you have to go through, there's only one way to get out at the end of the show. And it's with all the celebrities who are like getting their picture taken on the steps outside. And so I was in line between, it was Paris Hilton, which she's still around. she was in front of me, and then behind me was Mila Kunis. And I'm just sitting there disgusting and just tired and angry with my big suitcase, just wanting to get out. But we had to like wait for it. And I was just like, what, why, how? Just let me out the like the trash chute or something, because that's who I am here. And so it's like I never feel like I actually fit in that world. I've always been really obsessed with comedy and more the, you know, that's, it's just always actually been more my energy. But one thing that I feel like it helps with is, I don't know, like if you guys have ever seen this happen with other comics, but like when comics are like real thirsty and weird around like big names when they come around, and you're just like, you're being weird about this.
So like, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants to, nobody's going to like rush to, you know, if you met somebody and they were like made you uncomfortable and you're like, you're not going to try to get them on your lineup in the future or whatever, you know, just be fucking cool. Just be.
Yeah.
And so like being around a lot of celebrities at the like Fashion Week has helped me realize that everybody's not worth, you know, like freaking out about.
Right. Especially now that the word is out that Mila Kunis doesn't bathe.
I didn't know where it came from at first.
Bathing.
I saw like, I opened Twitter and they were like, Ashton and Mila like bathing their kid. I was like, what is the internet? Like
right. That's the big, and more coming out, and it's like, and they're all LA based, where it's hotter and they're sweating more and not bathing. What is happening? And there's like Demois blind items coming in with more celebrities. Like, oh yeah, I'm a stylist. Like, I work real close to them, and they stink. Like, it's just a thing. I don't understand.
Is there anyone that you've met through styling that did make you like that it was harder to keep your cool around than others?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, actually, like shortly after I transitioned, I met Laverne Cox at a show, and I was like, you know, in the trans world, that like that was one time where it was, you know, a celebrity and like, you know, personal connection that was big that like I like was definitely awkward talking to her. And luckily, I don't think that she remembered me. I met her again like 2 years later. And I don't, you know, there's no reason to remember me other than like, maybe, you know, when, if you have this many tattoos, sometimes you're hard to forget. But luckily, she didn't remember me.
I love it. So our listeners can't see, but we'll probably post a photo that Bailey is covered in gorgeous and super cool tattoos.
Some of them.
Yeah, I guess it's when you have a lot of them, I guess it hides flows. The ones that you that you don't like as much.
Perfect.
But it's a look that, you know, can pass in like a high fashion and then also like underground comedy world.
I was
world.
Thinking that and trying to articulate that. earlier.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Carolyn. Yeah. It's a good look for both worlds, I think.
It definitely works. And I'm like, and I would be lying if it didn't, like, cause I often will meet people and they're like, oh, I've seen you on like flyers and stuff. And I mean, like, you've probably seen a lot of people a bunch of times, but like, you know, how many white Bryans are you going to remember, you know? But like, if you see like, right, you know, yeah, some, you know, you know, somebody with neck tattoos, and like pinkish, yeah, hair, you might remember that you saw them again next time.
Neck tattoos definitely make people very memorable, like neck and chest area.
Does that hurt more than the average tattoo?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, especially because some of it's actually up on my jawbone, like the bottom of my jawbone. Yeah, so that hurt a lot. And then actually it comes up behind my ear onto my hairline.
Oh, look at that.
Some of this, I actually like, some of this, I end up shaving a little bit of my hairline at that time so it could go into my hairline. And for some reason, tattooing on like the hair follicle was just like a new pain that I had felt before.
Wow. I haven't heard that before.
My hairstylist calls me a wolf. Wolverine, because I have the hair that grows there.
Is that hair where you have to decide like how much of this is hair and how much of this is fuzz?
Right. It's my fur, actually. Yeah.
When did you start getting tattoos? I kind of want to go a little bit off topic and talk about your tattoos, if you don't mind. But
I started getting tattooed right at 18. I grew up in music scenes, like punk rock and metal scenes. And, I started getting tattooed right at 18. And then, I got a bunch real early on cause I had, somebody that I actually went to beauty school with, her boyfriend was a tattoo artist. And so, I had like bartered with them and he gave me some of my first like really bad tattoos. And then when I was living in Kansas City for a couple of years, I was bartering for tattoos. So I had a client who owned a tattoo shop and he was one of the best in the city. And he wanted to pay his receptionist more money, but he couldn't afford to. And so he tattooed me for free if I colored and cut her hair for free whenever she wanted it. And so at least half my tattoos I got for free from doing hair.
That's so cool. I love that.
Exchange of services.
I have zero skills that I can barter. Right. I don't know. In terms of being in these two worlds, is there a difference in how you're received as a queer trans person?
You know, there is. I mean, like in the hair world, I feel like, especially in like high fashion, it's this world of often more, you know, left-leaning, liberal kind of people, more progressive people. But also it's a world where like, even if people are conservative, they wouldn't like bring their opinions to that like work environment.
Right.
I remember when I was getting ready to come out, the creative director for the company that I work for, we've been close for a long time. And so a couple months before I actually came out, I told him that I was going to transition. I was going to come out and I was worried about our clients and our like people that we go do classes and events with. And he was like, if you can't do this here, where can you do it? And, right. And so that was like a really encouraging thing, but it was true too. You know, like it is again, a pretty gay world, in fashion. And, yeah. But then in comedy, like it can be a lot, one or the other. Like I am usually more surprised at how good comics are about like when, you know, a lot of times people like won't know until I do a bunch of trans material or they say that they don't know. I don't really know. I'd say most of the time people are way cooler. And if ever I have any problems, it's usually like weird, you know, drunk audience members or something. I did a mic the other day, and right. some guy was like drinking at the bar at this mic, and he's like, too much information. And it's like,
but
as far as like comics are typically way cooler about it than people would assume.
Yeah,
but you know, we still live in the, and we're doing comedy to the world, and not everybody's in.
Right. Yeah, I feel like comedians are great, like one-on-one, and when you're talking to them and stuff, they're cool about whatever. But then you'll hear them on stage, and then they'll make a joke, and you're like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. I mean, I think that
okay.
There's so many comics who, you know, whether it's queer issues or anything, like some of the easiest or like the like easiest jokes are things that are like shocking. You know, it's like new
right.
comics will often like lean into whatever is like, you know, you weren't supposed to say or whatever. And it's like kind of sure. tired, but it's like, I think that also a lot of people don't have any clue on how they actually make people feel, or maybe they don't actually care or whatever.
Right.
I have a much lower threshold for like what people can say around me. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't affect others. And so it is weird hearing things when, it's people that, know that I'm trans, and they'll say things and be like, do you know that I would be like not offended, or like, are you saying that because you just think it was such a good joke that like, it doesn't matter if it's something shitty, you know? So
yeah,
you do hear a lot of weird shit from like straight guys. You're just like, that was what you pulled from? Like, you don't have anything else in your life that you could right. be writing about? Like, why is this yeah. so important to you?
Yeah.
Hope they just stay at the open mics as much as possible and not the shows.
Yeah, it's interesting how, but also not surprising that in my experience, I've witnessed a lot of cis straight men wanting to make jokes specifically about trans women. And then trans women comedians I know have some of the thickest skin and like don't give a shit attitude of comics I know. And then you don't really have cis women making jokes about trans men. And then I would say, not that I know too many, but I feel like some of the trans comics I know would be a little bit more like sensitive to that.
Yeah.
Does that
no,
make
I mean,
sense?
I think that there's a lot to be said about how people are, you know, how people grow up and like how you're socialized or whatever. And I think that whether right. people are conscious of how that affects like how you treat people, I think people are very aware of like if people have like subconscious reasons that they like treat like cis females a certain way, often whether they know it or not, I think that sometimes those same people are doing that to trans men, and it's not right. But it is kind of like something that I've seen as well. And I think that that's why it works in that same way where maybe cis men who are like are cool, like in the understanding of trans women. But like, I think that in their heads, maybe subconsciously they're going, oh, well, you know, you grew up in a similar way to me, so I'm going to like talk shit because you'll be fine with it.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's a weird thing to think about, but I do think that there's a lot of like subconscious reasons people talk the way they do about that.
Switching gears a little bit, what about dating in both industries? So I know you have a girlfriend now, but is there dating between like hairstylists and their clients? Like, do people
definitely
hit it off? Because, you, like you said, it's very
like Sherry,
yeah.
Jeffy, and Kate.
I mean, I've known
it's very intimate.
So many, especially like straight cis hairstylists who hook up with so many of their clients, because it is like there's that intimate connection you're having with people, and you're like one-on-one. Like, a lot of times it seems like they're on a date half the time, when like these like straight guys that I've worked with are, you know, doing a cut and color. They're with, you know, they're with these girls for, you know, 3-4 hours at a time, like captive
right.
audience, you know?
Longer than a date.
So like, yeah, I've seen that a lot. And actually I remember, so I mentioned working for, as an assistant, when I first got out of beauty school, I assisted this male hairstylist in LA. And the assistant before me was his girlfriend. So like they started out working and then they started dating. And then she ended up going to work somewhere else so that they could actually date in a better way or something. But I remember too, within the first few weeks of working there, evidently his girlfriend, the ex assistant, had gotten a DUI. And so then one of our clients, who is a lawyer, was fighting her DUI in return for haircuts for himself, for his wife, and his girlfriend. His girlfriend on the side also came to us. And so part of my job was scheduling and making sure that they didn't get charged and they didn't schedule the wife and girlfriend at the same time.
And the wife didn't know about the girlfriend?
No.
Okay.
It was, and like, I grew up out in the suburbs in Southern California, and this was like, I'm like working in LA, and I was like, I guess this is what LA is. This feels
right,
like what they said it would be. All that to be fighting a DUI for the girlfriend who like was the assistant. It's stylists are messy people sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like comedy, there's probably no HR unless you get a job with one of the larger companies,
yeah,
right?
I mean, typically it's just you're working for a stylist that opened their own salon because they didn't want to work for anybody else. And so HR is just some other stylist that doesn't understand how to run a business in the first place.
Or even if you're just like a stylist renting a chair somewhere, like you're subject to however the customers or the other people working there treat you.
No structure whatsoever.
Yeah. Ugh.
Chaos. I've never even thought about the levels of bartering.
<There's> so much
that happen.
If the world goes down, I'm going to still have a skill to offer everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God, I want a skill.
Yeah, I don't know about like when I see people who date in the comedy, it's so funny watching comics who date each other, like be at like at like mics and shows together. I mean, it was yesterday or 2 days ago. I know a couple, I like both of them, but a lot of times their jokes are like about each other or like, and I'm just like, she was just up here. Like, we just heard the other half
Drag
of this
me.
Story.
That's why I don't like going to Mike's with Allie, because it just actually turns into a roast session. And then we start playing it up for the other comics to like see how good we can get each other. And then we lose sight of what we're actually trying to do. Yes, we have like legitimate bits about each other. But like when we're in a mic or like a more casual environment, we're just like
a long, silent train ride home
at that point. Yeah, we run things by each other before because I remember when we first started dating, she had played the Laugh Factory the night before. I didn't want to go. I stayed in, and then she was taking a shower the next morning and was listening back to her set to get ready for her next show that night. And I just heard all this stuff about my family and I was just like, with her thick Southern accent, I was like, you need to work this out and first run it by me, open mic it some more. You sound racist. Like, I just, it was like an explosive fight. And since then, we run bits by each other before we do them about each other.
When I'm writing any, I have very little material about my girlfriend because, first off, she doesn't really like a lot of attention. She's like pretty private, but also like, anytime she has heard jokes that even like relatively, she knows the context around, she's like, wait, but did that actually happen? And we're like, well, yeah, but like it's, and she doesn't really understand like some of the mechanisms that go into like, bringing it to life, you know? And, then anything that's about her, I'm like, well, but they don't know you. It doesn't. And so it's like, I can't imagine that person being in the audience or being on the lineup with me every time.
Yeah. I try to do less shows with Allie now. I opened for her for like summer 2019. We did shows on the road and it was just, I can't handle it. psychically anymore.
I was listening to psychologically. Somebody's podcast recently. They were talking with Caitlin Palufo, and you know, she dates Steven Rogers, and like they like go on tour together, and like if one's headlining, the other one like opens for them. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I like you guys together. You should not do this together.
The power dynamic. It's too much.
Yeah, I know. Maddie Smith and her boyfriend is a comic, and I used to go to the same mic as both of them every time. And whenever she's doing her blowjob jokes, I'm just looking at him.
At 5 years, you get numb to it, I guess. But yeah, it was
well,
very
I'm glad to be the third wheel on a lineup with you and Allie tomorrow, Melody.
Woo! Yeah, you just get ready. It is going to be a lot
of I got the flyer, and I'm like, wait, it's just the three of us? There's no padding for me not to feel like the third wheel? Cool, cool.
Oh, if you guys didn't know how gay that trip is going to be already, you have to go on the topless Jeep tour. One of the producers, Kristen, has a Jeep that she does like dune tour. She'll like take you out on the sand dunes and do like a sort of like, it's so fun, but it is, I mean, it's just a bunch of lesbians in a Jeep, you know, out in the wilderness.
Oh,
it's fucking
my
great.
God.
Oh, but you're not taking your tops off, because
like
my wife really wants to be in a situation where she's in a car without a roof and can take
her
top off.
This
is like a
definitely
weird,
happen
like,
if
bucket list thing for her. Okay.
Is she coming?
Yeah, we'll be there.
Oh,
for
yeah,
the week,
she'll be there
in P Town. So maybe I can make her dreams come true. Wow, how exciting!
Thanks
for the hot
time
tip
for all of us.
My wife's the only one on this Jeep with her
just driving 6 miles per hour. And she's just like, I feel so free. Yeah.
Going back to hairstyling, do you find that what you've learned in terms of getting ahead in that industry are going to help you with getting ahead in comedy?
Yeah, that's actually like a super interesting question, because I think like a lot of times it's like, I'm sure you've seen this in comedy where you're like, wait, there are so many intensely talented people that like aren't moving forward in the way that they should. Yeah. And it's frustrating to watch, but I realize, especially from my experience in hairstyling and the fashion world, is that like, sometimes it's even more important just to like be good to people and like make connections and like be somebody who is easy to work with. I was doing Fashion Week way before I should have been there. And part of it is because I was like a really great assistant. Like for a while when I was doing Fashion Week, I was just somebody who was helping somebody else do hair. You know, a lot of times, like what you need to do is just be a really great part of a team and not necessarily be the, just another lead, you know? So I find that in comedy, one of the things that I feel like has helped me a lot in like progressing and getting myself around comics that build me up and like help me learn better habits and better, you know, skills is by being somebody who is easy to work with, and like just being good to be around. I mean, like there are so many, you know, obviously like a lot of times our material can be cynical, but if you're just like hard to be around, why would anybody book you?
Right.
Yeah. And take you on the road for a weekend to feature. I realized that in Chicago, I was given some like good opportunities that I didn't think I was ready for, but on the car ride once, like a headliner told me like, it's like, you just need to be able to be around someone for 5 hours. Like, and I passed that test. Or like comics who want to eventually write. It's like people think just because it's a solitary thing, stand-up comedy, you could be as like batshit crazy as you want. Like you are just your singular force. But like if you want to get staffed on a writing show or something, you need to show people that you can also work in a
team.
Be
dependable.
And not be crazy constantly. Yeah. Like let it be a persona and not just like your whole deal that's stopping you from getting. I've seen so many people just not get opportunities for that reason, because they are who they are off stage.
Typically people are going to grow like skill wise, but like if you're just like uncomfortable and like hard to work with, like you're not going to grow because nobody wants to have you working on with them. You know, you're not going to get new opportunities because you're just a pain.
Yeah.
I feel like that's also something that I try to remember, that being in my 30s and starting much later than most people do, I have a lot of perspective of like how much more important it is just to be good to people that you work with. I think that that's really important. And a lot of times younger people or younger comics don't understand how much that matters.
For sure.
Oh yeah. I envy people who start later, actually, because I started in my early 20s and felt like I just wasted so much time. I was also figuring out how to be a person, let alone a comic. And yeah, I just see such efficiency and like enviable structure at people's approach, like the later they start.
I always wonder like how anybody like has anything to write about because they haven't lived much life yet.
Yeah. I mean, I literally, some of my first material was just so annoying and about how, like, I can't wait to be in my 30s because then people are going to take me seriously.
And then you get here and you're like, nobody does.
Doing it to a room of 30 somethings.
Yeah. That's better than having the 26-year-old be like, I'm panicking because I'm almost 30. And you're like, all right, you can leave now.
Oh my God. I went to that Pete's mic and that was the premise for half of over half the comics, like approaching the big 3-0. Oh my
Life
God.
Life is over.
I think I saw a gray. Like, yeah. And I did material like that in my 20s. Yeah. It's just a stupid time.
Yeah. I did feel because I also started later, and especially starting in, I took an improv class over the summer and there were literally people who had just graduated high school and they were like, oh my God, you're 10 years older than me. That's Ooh. Crazy. I'm like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I got hit with a, that's okay. When I told my age to a 20 something comic at a mic recently, are you fucking kidding me?
But
that's okay.
I do find that there are advantages because I had a lot of business experience that I know how to kind of make smart decisions. Yeah. I know how to be strategic. I know how to stay out of drama, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know how to keep a schedule. I don't know.
I was thinking about this the other day because I'm going to Chicago for a show and like I'm trying to like find a couple spots, right? And I like got some contacts from people, but like just the way you contact people after you have like professional life experience versus how, like, I've heard some of the things that people, like, you know, in the early 20s will message to get spots and you're like, are you even likable to you?
Yeah,
because this
bad.
Is terrible.
Chances are no.
Oh man. Well, Bailey, I hope we do have a lot of listeners in Chicago. So if you get booked, like, where can people follow you on social media and see what shows you have coming up? I recommend anybody who's in one of the cities where Bailey's doing comedy, go see her because she's very funny. And I love watching you. You know, there's some people that you run into mics a lot and you're like, oh, I have to listen to this set again. But every time I see you, I'm like, oh, cool, Bailey's
Yay.
Here.
No, I'm always happy to see you because I feel like we are on a similar wavelength and there are so many people who are like, oh, I know too much about you.
Yeah.
Actually, if you go to baileypopecomedy.com, you can find my links to social and Instagram is always going to be the best and like most updated place for shows. I'll be in Chicago September 8th through 11th and anywhere in New York you can find on Instagram.
Amazing. Well, Bailey, thank you so much for diking out with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Bailey.
Melody, are you making a list of things to barter to get Bailey to do your hair? Because I'm already like, what can I offer?
I know.
Probably just money.
It's depressing. Yeah, it's actually just money.
It's probably all. At this point in Bailey's career, I think she no longer wants to barter for. She wouldn't want me to give her a tattoo.
No.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't want me to scream jokes at her. Like, what do I do? Like, I don't have any skills. I'm spiraling. Let's get to the listener question.
Okay.
Oh, this is fun. I have a newer friend that I've had a crush on since I met her.
A huge crush, Melody. A huge crush.
Did I not say huge?
You just said a crush. We got, oh my God. We got to differentiate.
Because this makes a huge difference. Yeah. Because we all know those crushes.
Yes.
And for me, that's any queer person I meet. And then you have your huge crushes. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is one that's very on the mind. Okay. She knows that I'm bi, but she has made it clear that she's not interested in girls whatsoever. So I've never told her about the crush. Our friend group recently went to a bar and she got wasted and was dancing all over me, shoving her ass to twerk on me. Twerk is in quotes. I just want to... I love that little detail. I love dancing silly and slutty with my friends and would be okay with it if I didn't have a crush on her. But this feels different slash unfair because I do. Since she said that she doesn't like girls, I'm trusting that this is completely platonic and nothing more. I don't want it to happen again, but I also don't want to make a big deal out of it. Is there anything I should say or do?
What a great question, because I feel like many of our listeners have been in a similar scenario, because straight girls are known for these shenanigans that are boldly stating they could never with another woman.
Right.
And then putting their butthole on your vulva, like that's, or whatever you got going on, they will do that. And what does it mean? You know, if when she says she's made it clear that she's not interested in girls whatsoever, at first I thought, doth protest too much. Because I don't have many friends who have made it clear that they're not into girls whatsoever.
Who's doing that in 2021?
Right. And I feel like if someone has to go out of the way to state that, it means that maybe they do deep down and they're scared by it. And when they get wasted, they find their friend who does like girls and think, maybe I can twerk on them and see how it makes me feel.
She is just dancing her way up that Kinsey scale, and she's got to be able to confront it when she's sober.
Yes. So that's a good question. What do you do in this situation? Because she was wasted. It also, by the fact that she has stated that she's not interested in girls whatsoever, that if you say anything about it, she might have, you know, one of those dramatic faux freakouts where she's making it a bigger deal than it really is. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my 20s.
Yeah.
Right.
And she'll be like, oh, I can't believe you would even think that. No, whatever. So maybe I would say maybe it doesn't need to be addressed, but if it starts happening again,
if it's
stop it in the moment and be like, hey, you know, I don't want to dance with you like this.
Yeah.
Or just walk away.
She'll know
or
why
just dance
you're
with someone
saying
else.
That. Yeah. She'll deduce that it you might have, like, it might spark some more feelings. And then if she wants to do something about it, she will know she has that option.
We're probably making the crush worse by being like, she's probably a little bit gay.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
But yeah, I wouldn't say anything for now, especially, you know, people's memories of their behavior when they're drunk isn't always great. And sometimes they can go two ways. They can apologize profusely about it and feel bad about it and say, oh, I'm so sorry, I won't do it again. Or they will deny and act weird about it and then project onto you, whatever. It's a mess. So just be mindful of it next time. And when you see her backing that ass up, you back up as well. You like me saying backing that ass up?
Because I was just saying the word you talked. You said fashion introing Bailey.
Back
and
that
now you're
ass
saying
up.
The most, you cram in all those sharp A's into a sentence. Back that ass up.
Be right back. I'm calling my speech therapist. Okay. Actually, my neighbor does speech therapy and she does accent reduction. So maybe I'll ask her if she has
reduction.
I'll ask her if she has a tip for the sharp A's.
Oh my God. No, I love it. I genuinely love it. just back that ass up.
If you have a listener question or comments on my accent, please send it to dikingout@gmail.com and we will put you in the queue. And you can follow us everywhere at Diking Out on social medias. Also, go to patreon.com/dikingout. That is our community where we give extra content every single week. We've been recapping Elwer Gen Q episodes, giving all of our hot takes, pointing out the ridiculous things you might not have noticed, and drooling over Gigi just every time, no matter what. I know that that's what it's going to devolve into.
No matter what pairing we find her in.
Yes, she could be doing her laundry by herself at the laundromat, would watch half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thanks so much for diking out with us.
We'll see you next Tuesday, baby.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.